What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
A Texas community mourns the victims of a mass shooting at an elementary school. Plus, how Iran used UN records to evade nuclear weapons investigations.
The archives gave us a real hint that Iran's work was more comprehensive, had gone further on building an actual nuclear weapon than it was believed.
And how the Russian ruble rebounded. It's Thursday, May 26th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli with the Wall Street Journal, filling in for Luke Vargas. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. More than 1,000 people gathered for a prayer vigil in Uvalde, Texas last night to honor the 19 children and two teachers killed in a mass shooting at Robb Elementary School. Pastor Neftali Barboza was among those offering messages of support.
I ask God that you be with those who have lost loved ones. May you comfort them, Father, as they mourn, as they try to gather their thoughts and gather themselves. May you make yourself present in their life.
The deadliest school shooting in a decade has reignited a national debate over gun control. Texas Governor Greg Abbott dismissed calls for more gun regulation during a press conference yesterday, saying that cities with stronger gun laws aren't safe either. Officials say the gunman used two assault-style weapons bought within a week of his 18th birthday. In Washington, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said there is no obvious path forward for gun measures without help from Republicans to advance legislation in the evenly divided chamber. We report exclusively that Apple is boosting pay for its employees amid rising inflation, a tight labor market, and unionization pushes among hourly store employees. In an email, the company told employees starting pay for hourly workers will rise to $22 an hour. Starting salaries for U.S. workers are also expected to rise. Apple joins a growing list of companies raising incentives to attract and keep workers. The Labor Department says U.S. businesses and government employers spent 4.5% more on worker costs in the first 3 months of this year compared to the same period a year ago. According to recent regulatory filings, Elon Musk is committing more of his own money to finance his $44 billion deal to buy Twitter. The filings show he plans to put up $33.5 billion in equity, up from a previous $27.25 billion. Musk recently cast doubt on the deal, saying it was temporarily on hold earlier this month, before saying he remained committed to the deal. The price of natural gas is surging into summer ahead of air conditioning season, adding pressure to household budgets and manufacturing costs. Prices have tripled over the past year and have not been so high since 2008, which was before frackers flooded the market with cheap shale gas. Fuel traders and analysts say prices could climb even higher if hot weather arrives and air conditioners are cranked up before enough gas can be injected into storage facilities. And Boeing's Starliner spacecraft landed in the desert on Wednesday after undocking from the International Space Station. This marks the end of a test mission the company first tried to complete more than 2 years ago. Finishing the flight sets the stage for a launch of the Starliner with astronauts on board, although teams from NASA and Boeing plan further analysis of several technical issues that emerged on the test flight. Russia's central bank cut its key interest rate today to 11% from 14%. It's the third cut since early April as the bank seeks to support a faltering economy and to steady a strengthening ruble. You may not have expected this, but the ruble is now the best performer against the dollar this year, based on a Dow Jones market data analysis of dozens of currencies. So what happened? Joining me now to explain is Wall Street Journal markets reporter Caitlin McCabe. Hi, Caitlin.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Caitlin, this seems counterintuitive. What's boosting the value of the ruble right now?
So I think anyone who hasn't been following the ruble for the past few months would be pretty shocked to learn that the ruble is actually one of the best, if not the best performing currencies against the dollar this year, which is really shocking if you think about just a few months ago when the Russian markets were really in free fall after the invasion of Ukraine. And so the thing about currencies is that one of the reasons you might see a currency strengthen is that people are feeling optimistic about a country's economic outlook. But that's not what we're seeing in Russia. You know, what people have described is that Russia really engineered a rebound in the ruble by doing a few different things, like barring banks from selling foreign currencies to customers and requiring Russian exporters to convert at one point 80% of their foreign currency revenues into rubles. And right in the aftermath of the invasion of Ukraine, the central bank also raised its key interest rate to 20%, which was also a way to help shore up the strength of the ruble.
So, Caitlin, what does this mean for the impact of Western sanctions that were designed to cripple Russia's economy? Won't a rebounding ruble help Moscow?
So I think what's important to note is that a strong ruble doesn't necessarily mean that the sanctions aren't working. It's really hard to get a good economic picture out of the country right now to determine the impact of the sanctions. But people are expecting that there will be an economic hit. Economists say that there are reasons why the country might want a weaker ruble. A strong ruble reduces Russia's export competitiveness and threatens to hit the country's budget by reducing the value of oil and gas tax revenues that are denominated in dollars. So in the last few weeks, we've seen Russia try to loosen some of the capital controls that it put in place, like today when we saw the central bank cut interest rates again, reducing them from that initial 20% increase that we saw at the start of the war.
That's Wall Street Journal markets reporter Caitlin McCabe. Caitlin, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, how Iran evaded investigations into its nuclear program and what that could mean for the future of talks to restore the 2015 nuclear accord. We'll have that story after the break.
You're a growing business and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
We report exclusively that Iran used secret records of the United Nations International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, nearly two decades ago to skirt investigations into its nuclear program and hide suspected work on nuclear weapons. That's according to Middle East intelligence officials and documents reviewed by the Wall Street Journal. The IAEA, based in Vienna, declined to comment on the documents and didn't respond to questions about its handling of security. Iranian officials didn't respond to requests for comment. Tehran has always denied working on nuclear weapons. The disclosure of these documents comes as talks to return to the 2015 nuclear agreement, which lifted most international sanctions on Iran in exchange for limits on Tehran's nuclear activities, have stalled. So where does that leave the future of these negotiations? Joining me now is The Wall Street Journal's Lawrence Norman, our deputy bureau chief in Brussels. Hi, Lawrence. Thanks for being here.
Hi, it's a pleasure.
So, Lawrence, tell us more about these documents from the IAEA that Iran is reported to have obtained. What information or advantage even did having these documents afford Iran?
So there's actually a range of documents that we have reviewed. It includes IAEA, UN Atomic Agency, confidential reports, but it also includes a number of other documents that reveal how Iran concealed information, concealed what it had been doing in its nuclear work from the agency. But the basic advantage, to give you one very direct example that we have in our story, is the Iranians obtained an IAEA document which had all kinds of information about what the agency knew about some work that Iran was doing with something called heavy water, which can be used to produce plutonium for a nuclear weapon. And the agency had used satellite images and various other things and had done all kinds of work and had a list of 18 questions that it wanted to run by Iran and a number of things to look out for on an upcoming visit to the site. And the Iranians got this document. They circulated it 3 days before the visit to some of their most senior nuclear and government officials. And so they knew what the agency was going to ask. They had time to work out what they should say in response. They had time to coordinate that. So it was the same message from everyone. And they also got insight into all kinds of things that the agency had learned that the agency did not know that Iran knew. So it was a big advantage to be getting these documents, which is presumably why they went through the effort of trying to get them through intelligence means.
How are these documents obtained? How do we even know about this?
So in 2018, in a rather extraordinary operation, Israel managed to send agents into Tehran and get, well, 55,000 documents and about 55,000 CDs and other things with documents on them out of a place that Israel had identified as an archive where Iran kept all the documents and all the material connected to the nuclear work it had done back in the 1990s and early 2000s. Those documents have been verified. They've been seen by independent experts. They've been passed over to US intelligence officials and I believe to the UN Atomic Agency. And it is from that trove that these documents came. But these documents haven't been released before, and it was never known. It was suspected, but it had never been proven that Iran had managed to penetrate the agency and its documents.
What do these documents tell us about the current state of Iran's nuclear program?
So they don't tell us a lot that we don't know. Most of what Iran is doing in nuclear activities, we believe we know. They declared it as part of the nuclear deal. And there's a wide range of programs that Iran claims is civilian, but could be used for nuclear weapons. However, what these documents go back to is a big, big unknown question over this, which is when they were allegedly working on a nuclear weapons program before 2003, how much did they learn? So we know that they've got enough nuclear fuel in Iran and they're open about this and the agency reports on this to fuel at least two nuclear weapons. The big question is, how long would it take them to build a nuclear weapon? And the answer to that is it really depends on just how much they learned in this time period before 2003 and to what extent they've managed to guard that knowledge or slightly increase that knowledge over the years covertly. And we just don't know the full answer to that. The archives gave us a real hint that Iran's work was more comprehensive, had gone further on building an actual nuclear weapon than it was believed.
So, Lawrence, this comes as the U.S. and European allies are trying to revive the 2015 Iran nuclear deal after former President Donald Trump left it in 2018. Can these records from two decades ago tell us anything about Iran's current negotiations? How does this impact ongoing talks?
There's one way that it impacts ongoing talks. So for whatever reason, the Iranians remain incredibly sensitive about any admission that they had a weapons program. They consistently deny it, and they remain incredibly sensitive to these investigations, which have continued effectively to this day by the agency into exactly what they did and nuclear material that's been found in Iran. Iran wanted the IAEA to shut the investigation that the agency is still conducting into the work that it's done. And they wanted it to do it next month in June. And they wanted it done before a nuclear deal is restored. However, the agency said to them, we're open to doing that if you answer all the questions we have. And we're waiting for an IAEA report in the coming days, but my information is that the Iranians have not cooperated or answered those questions. In fact, we're in a slightly different situation right now. Those talks have stalled anyway for now, and it doesn't look as if we're close to the Iranians and the US agreeing to revive the deal.
All right, that's the Wall Street Journal's Lawrence Norman, our Deputy Bureau Chief in Brussels. Lawrence, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks a lot.
And finally, how old are you really? Your biological age, the age of your cells and organs, rather than the number of candles on your birthday cake, might help determine your quality of life as you get older, scientists say. Although there is no standard way yet to measure biological age, activities that influence it include sleep, exercise, and diet. Wall Street Journal senior writer Betsy Morris, who covers wellness and do-it-yourself healthcare, says startups have already begun working in this emerging field.
Right now, you've got a lot of startups that are making various health products already, continuous glucose monitors or tracking apps, your smartphone. There are lots of startups that are trying to develop direct-to-consumer ways to measure biological age, meaning another app that will take in all of the data that you're getting from your smartphone and elsewhere and allow you to monitor your biological age in real time. So you can see if your exercise plan is helping you or whether you need to fine-tune it.
And that's what's news for this Thursday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli with The Wall Street Journal, filling in for Luke Vargas. Thanks for listening.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.